As we kick off the new year, many of us resolve to grow closer to God. But how do we actually do that? Well, we have a resource to help you do just that through our free ebook, 5 Ways to Connect with God. This resource shares 5 simple but powerful spiritual practices to deepen your relationship with God, from cultivating thankfulness to asking God for a word for the year. This guide will help you to find rest, focus, and renewed connection with God as we begin the new year. Download your copy now at premierinsight.org. Start your year off closer to God. That's premierinsight.org. Now, let's get started with today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
The talk you are about to hear was given at the C.S. Lewis Group at Ulster's Spring Mini Symposium back in May 2023. The event was entitled C.S. Lewis and the Land of His Birth, Rerouting Lewis in Ulster and the Island of Ireland. You can find out more about the C.S. Lewis Group at Ulster by heading to their website, which I will make sure that I include in the show notes. We will be hearing from the Reverend Paul Clayton Lee, and the title of his talk was C.S. Lewis and the Wee Country. I will now hand over to one of the symposium's co-organisers, Kirsty Donnelly, to introduce Rev Paul Clayton Lee, and then you will hear the first part of his talk.
I'm very pleased to introduce our next speaker for this afternoon, Reverend Paul Clayton Lee. Paul is a priest of the Archdiocese of Armagh, a graduate of St. Patrick's College, Maynooth, and Fordham University, New York. He's worked for 37 years as a teacher, college chaplain, and parish priest. He regularly featured on BBC Radio Ulster and Radio 4 as broadcaster of Thought for the Day and religious services. He's currently the editor of Intercom magazine, a Catholic pastoral and liturgical resource. And to mark the anniversary of the 60th anniversary of the death of C.S. Lewis, he has written and published C.S. Lewis and the Wee County, which explores the links between C.S. Lewis and his brother Warren and County Louth. Paul's previous publications include In the Light of the Word, Family Life Through the Lens of Scripture, and Pass It On, Ronan Drury, 1924 to 2017, with Maria Flood. So I'd now like to welcome Paul to the stage.
As I say, I think after listening to the last wonderful presentation, it is time to dial down the expectations for this part of the programme. But I want to express my gratitude, as indeed David did, to the organisers, in particular Curtis, for extending me the invitation to contribute to the gathering here today. It's a great privilege. It's very exciting to see so many people so interested still in C.S. Lewis, who seems to be growing from strength to strength all over the place. And the invitation, as it was said, came on the heels of the publication of the small book I'd put together to commemorate the 60th anniversary of his death and also marking the 50th anniversary of the death of his brother, Warren, who died in 1973. And the book does indeed focus on the links that the brothers had over many years with my native county of Louth, where they're still remembered, as I discovered, remembered by some who met them during their visits to the county. And in Warren's case, they're remembered by some of the women particularly who cared for him because of his alcohol dependency over many years, and then others who knew of him through their family members or friends. But the inspiration for the book came in 2018 when the Annagassan Historical Society, which is in County Louth, they organised a walk in the footsteps of C.S. Lewis in the County Louth parish of Janie Moore, Mrs. Moore and her family, whose life, as we know, had become intertwined with Jack and Warnie for more than 30 years. And Janie had been christened in the Church of St. John the Baptist in Dunaney, a very beautiful spot in the county. And her father, the Reverend William Askins, had ministered in that parish for 25 years. Indeed, the church organ, still playing well there today, is actually dedicated to his memory. And both of Mrs. Moore's parents are buried in the parish. But anyway, in 2018, we walked from that church where we had gathered as a group around the baptismal font where Janie had been christened. And there were families and children in this walking tour. And we proceeded then on the walk from the church 3 miles through fields and leafy lanes on a lovely warm Sunday afternoon, as I remember, to the remains of the Golden Arrow, the guest house made up of 3 disused railway carriages that were on the seashore at Salterstown, which is where that image is taken from. Jack and Warney standing on the pier at Salterstown. We adapted the image for the cover of the book because in the background you see the view that they had from the Golden Arrow as they woke up every morning. At different points, of course, on our walk that year, we paused for a lovely little event where children used to read passages from the Chronicles of Narnia. And indeed, they even planted a tree outside the former rectory where Janie had lived and looked after her widowed father and siblings until she got married. And when we reached the largely unchanged fields, because they are very much as they were in Warney and Jack's time, and we drank a cup of tea at the Golden Arrow site, well, it was then that the penny actually dropped for me, because as I relaxed and looked across Dundalk Bay to the Carlingford, Cooley and Lowermore Mountains, I recalled Jack's description of the scene in a letter that he'd written from the Golden Arrow, one of those very few letters you find from him which has an address Golden Arrow and not Oxford. And he wrote this letter to Mary Van Dusen in the summer of 1956. "Your letter," he wrote, "followed me to this place of unearthly beauty. I hear the waves breaking on the beach as I write, and I look across at the most fairy tale mountains you could ask for. Almost smoky mountains at the moment, for the last thunderstorm is just packing away behind them." It was my very first visit to the site, but I felt as though what I was viewing in that faraway vision was the gateway to Narnia. Like so many of my generation, I first read and was enchanted by the line, "The Witch in the Wardrobe," when I was a small boy growing up in the town of Drogheda in County Louth in the 1950s. I would have been even further enthralled, I can say, if I'd known the person who created Narnia sometimes actually passed my front door as he walked to visit his ailing brother in what was then a new state-of-the-art hospital, which is Our Lady of Lourdes Missionary Training Hospital, run by Mother Mary Martin and her nuns, the Medical Missionaries of Mary. Lewis came to Drogheda, where he was to stay for over a week, at the end of June in 1947. That picture was taken before then, because he had other links, which I won't go into today, but there were earlier links with the county. Warney had left Oxford earlier that month to stay at the Golden Arrow, the guest house that was owned and run by their hard-working Oxford housekeeper, Vera Henry. And interestingly, Vera Henry was another County Louth woman who was also Mrs. Moore's goddaughter. And his diary indicates that Warney had been longing to get away from the Kilns and take a lengthy holiday in Ireland because of his growing antipathy to the demands of Mrs. Moore upon his brother, and indeed the regular domestic dramas and tensions that had become everyday life at the Kilns, it seems, by those post-war years. And Jack, who didn't talk about this in Surprise by Joy or in other areas, he did reveal himself in some of his correspondence to various people. He referred to this bleak domestic period in a letter to the same Mary Van Dusen in April of 1951, shortly after Mrs. Moore's death that January. He wrote, "Strictly between ourselves, I've lived most of my life in a house which was hardly ever at peace for 24 hours, amid senseless wranglings, lyings, backbitings, follies and scares. I never went home without a feeling of terror as to what appalling situation might have developed in my absence. It's only now that it's over, though a different trouble has taken its place," he was referring to Warney, It's only now that it's over that I begin to realise quite how bad it was. Well, the summer of 1947 was the tipping point for Warnie, and it was at that point, we know he'd shared his life and his home with his brother, with Minto, as they called Janie, for over 20 years. And though the earliest years had been harmonious, according to Warnie's diary, his long acceptance of this arrangement was fraying at the edges. And his alcohol dependence had already hospitalised him on more than one occasion in Oxford. And on the 17th of April, just weeks before leaving for Ireland and the Golden Arrow, he wrote, "I've lost the kilns. For though I can still force myself to see that it is beautiful objectively, I loathe every stick and stone and sound of it." His friend and drinking companion, a man called Colonel Herbert Dennis Perkin, was to have accompanied Warnie on this Irish adventure in 47, but at the very last minute, he was unable to go. And so it seems after many days alone at the Golden Arrow in miserable weather, where he was mostly looking after himself, because Vera was still at Oxford with Jack, and with the nearest pub 3 miles away and a walk away, Warnie's mood grew very dark, and he wrote in his diary, "I've been in very deep waters since June the 12th. Great waves of depression began to overwhelm me from the very first, but it was the eerie greyness that killed me, or rather drove me to the drink that did very nearly kill me. For the artless Irishman spins out his exiguous supply of gin by mixing it with methylated spirit, and it was to this that I turned for consolation." Gin and methylated spirits. Well, the cocktail he consumed to ease his depression did actually nearly kill him. But so sickened, he still nevertheless managed to bundle himself into a taxi and sought the help of a young Drogheda GP, Dr. Costello, who had him admitted at once to Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital. And by the following day, Dr. Costello, it seems, was so concerned about Warnie's state that he advised Mother Mary Martin, regardless of Warnie's protestations, to actually send for his brother Jack. The timing of this medical emergency for Warnie couldn't have been worse for him, because Mrs. Moore was bedridden, but she was running the household from her bedroom, regularly interrupting Jack's work with household chores. His book on miracles had just been published. His teaching and material workload had grown with the record post-war influx of undergraduates at Oxford. And for 3 years, he'd been working on his contribution to the Oxford History of English Literature, which you might recall he abbreviated to OHEL, because it just went on forever. And he was also being interviewed at that time by Time magazine, a very revealing article that would appear on the cover a few weeks later, where he was described as one of the most influential spokesmen for Christianity in the English-speaking world.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I don't know about you, but sometimes I have big questions about life and I want thoughtful answers. That's why we're excited that we have this resource to offer called Ask NT Wright Anything, 12 Crucial Questions About Faith, the Bible and Life. This ebook distills wisdom from one of the world's leading theologians, NT Wright, tackling topics like life after death, the reliability of scripture, predestination and more. It's our hope that this resource will strengthen your faith and deepen your understanding. And here's the best part. It's our thank you gift when you give to support Premier Insight this month. So don't miss this opportunity to grow in your faith. Visit premierinsight.org to give today. That's premierinsight.org. Thank you for your generosity. And now let's get back to today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Ireland's newspaper archives, North and South, which I trawled for several days at that time, also reveal numerous references to Jack's books and his broadcasting success. So there were regular invitations for him to write and speak. The BBC, of course, were particularly anxious for his wartime popular broadcast to resume now in a different format. But so it was against this really hectic background that Jack made his journey to Drogheda at the end of June, where he booked a room in the town's White Horse Hotel, which was really the only suitable place of accommodation, I think, at the time. And it was a 20-minute walk from the hospital to and the convent. But it was from there, a few days later, on the 6th of July, that he wrote to the poet Ruth Pitter, "My brother, thank God, was out of danger when I reached him on Monday morning last, but was at the unearthly city of Drogheda, where almost every building is a church or a tavern, and what men do but pray and drink, or how life is supported in their bodies, I can't conceive." Not very complimentary to my hometown, but anyway, that was the start. But Jack added, however, and it was an important addition, "Warney is now in the care of the most charming nuns." And Warney himself, a little recovered, feeling somewhat guilty at the trouble that he'd caused Jack, was nevertheless delighted, of course, to see him. And he wrote in his diary, "Jack arrived, anxious and travel-stained, on Monday morning, and the sight of him did me more good than any medicine, for I still hadn't recovered from the fright of the possibility of dying without seeing him. And from this moment on, I began to mend rapidly." Within a few days, Warney had recovered sufficiently to leave the hospital, and Jack then took a taxi to the Golden Arrow and he collected Warney's things. And according to Warney, by that stage, Jack had become to warm up a bit. He'd become a bit more enthusiastic about Drogheda and its environs. And so the brothers made the decision they were going to make a holiday of this unexpected time together. And so they lodged in the White Horse Hotel together. They went on long walks by the River Boyne in both directions, with all of its mythological and historical resonances for both of them, you know, the mythology, the salmon of knowledge of the Boyne, the battle of the Boyne, the monastic settlements. They were all there in great richness. And Mother Mary, who was no slow coach, also took the opportunity to invite Jack to write something for her Orders magazine, who were celebrating their 10th anniversary. And thanks to Walter Hooper, the essay, which reflects on the value of caring for the sick, was retrieved years later and reprinted with the title Some Thoughts. But while I was researching the missionary archives for my own little book, I came across the previously unpublished title and introduction which Lewis had given to the original essay, and it was Some Thoughts of an Anglican Visitor. And Lewis introduced his essay, "You must not imagine that I, Anglican layman as I am, appear in the pages of this magazine as a gatecrasher or even as a volunteer. The editress, rashly courteous, asked me to contribute something, and since the command of a lady, and especially a lady of that house in which I've experienced overflowing kindness, is not to be resisted, here I am. I've been wondering a good deal what I can possibly say, and I'm a little nonplussed, as Pip was in Great Expectations, when a much less kindly lady suddenly said to him, 'Play, little boy.' On the whole, I think it will be best to try and share with you some thoughts which have spontaneously arisen in my mind during my short but refreshing acquaintance with the Lord's Hospital." And so then this wonderful essay was written, and he concluded it, I think, on why Christians who believe in eternal life fight so hard against sickness and death, with words that many of us love and remember well. He wrote, "Because we love something else more than this world, we love even this world better than those who know no other." So it seems that while tired and worried on his arrival, Jack actually had found some refreshment during his stay with Warney and Drogheda, and so decided just not to rush back to the kilns. And Warney's diary for that week is filled with lengthy descriptions of their daily walks and of his delight with the nuns who'd looked after him. And in fact, by the time he said a reluctant goodbye to them, he wrote that his medical emergency had been worthwhile, if only for meeting Mother Mary. But what he didn't realise at the time was that this friendship was going to continue for the following 26 years until his death in 1973. And he became so much at home there that on two occasions at least, he planned to move house from Oxford to Drogheda or the locality. I've been very fortunate, as I mentioned, to meet a number of the women who nursed Warney during those years, most of them nuns, very elderly now, but also some other ladies as well who can remember him, as well as a man who was given the task of ensuring that Warney didn't come to any harm if he did actually manage to sneak out of the hospital for a drink. And he certainly tried on more than one occasion. And Warney occasionally eluded them. And he once, one of the nuns told me, I didn't get this story in time for the book, but she told me that he sneaked back into the hospital in the middle of the night, but then only made it as far as the mortuary, where he was discovered asleep on a slab the following morning. So he was a handful. Jack was to have an ongoing worry with him, of course, that only abated significantly during his marriage to Joy. A year before Jack's marriage, he'd written to George Sayer, "Redouble your prayers for Warney. True, he is at present laid up, not with drink, but fibrositis, but he'd already started on a bottle of gin before he went sick. He's never had a year of such long debauches or so frequent as this." That was in 1956. But by 1957, in contrast, he wrote to Dorothy L. Sayers, "The blessed and unexpected result of my marriage has been to keep him absolutely sober and angelically helpful for months. It's wonderful. He was almost as much a friend of Joy's as I was when only a friend, and they have French history in common. In fact," he said, "if the medical were as good as the domestic situation, I'd be the most fortunate man in England." Unfortunately, of course, that didn't last. But Jack knew once Warney was in Ireland now that Mother Mary and her nuns would deal with emergencies and keep in touch. And so you could say they played their part in giving him relative peace of mind for his work. I was delighted to discover a letter written during what was to prove the last Christmas that the brothers celebrated together in 1962, a letter written by Warney on behalf of both of them to Mother Mary, and it indicates something of the warmth and familiarity that had grown between them. It hadn't been published before, so I was thrilled to find it. And he wrote, "Dear Mother Mary Martin, I was very annoyed with you for sending me a copy of Medical Missionaries of Mary magazine. It arrived on a day when I should have been sending out Christmas letters and cards, and I was tempted to stop work to look at it. The result was that I sat down and read it from cover to cover and had to sit up late to do my neglected correspondence. Seriously, we both found it excellent and beautifully produced, a credit to the community. As my brother said when he'd done with it, how rare it is to come across a missionary work which, in spite of the intrinsic value and interest of its matter, doesn't manage to be dull. Certainly in your book, there isn't a dull page from start to finish. Please give our joint greetings to all at the Lord's and with our prayerful wishes to you for a happy and prosperous 1963. P.S., and this is an interesting P.S., there's now a chance we may both be seeing you next summer." Well, the hope and plan had been that Jack and Warren would have a long holiday in Ireland in the summer of 1963. And Jack was also expecting a reunion with Arthur Greaves and a trip to Donegal, and looking forward to bringing his now 18-year-old stepson Douglas to Ireland for the first time. And the plan was Douglas would be introduced to the nuns and the rest of their Irish friends in County Louth. They'd become deep friends with the local Church of Ireland community and their relations in Dublin and Belfast, as well as Arthur. Jack had already written to Arthur, telling him how much he was longing to see him again, but sadly, in the event, Jack's declining health became ever more precarious. And in response to Jack's declining health, Warney, possibly now dreading the parting that was looking inevitable, left for Ireland without Jack in the June of 1963 and began a very long drinking holiday. leaving Jack alone with his mountain of correspondence and rapidly deteriorating health. But fortuitously, at this time, a young Walter Hooper arrived on the scene, and in the absence of Warney, was soon, with Jack's encouragement, helping him to sort out his affairs. Jack became seriously ill, was taken to hospital and almost died. And at that point, George Sayre, who Lewis's former pupil, friend and biographer, came to Drogheda and searching for Warney, but the nuns told him Warney had gone, had left for Dublin, and so Sayre returned to Oxford alone. So Jack's longed for Irish holiday and reunion with Arthur never happened, and sadly the two lifelong friends and confidants never met again.
That was the first part of the Reverend Paul Clayton Lee's talk, C.S. Lewis and the Wee County, which was given at the C.S. Lewis Group at Ulster's Spring Mini Symposium back in May 2023. The event there was entitled C.S. Lewis and the Land of His Birth, Rerouting Lewis in Ulster and the Island of Ireland. We'll be hearing the second part of Paul's talk next week. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.